Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts, sports journalist David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves, chillin', talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. He's Dave Bryan at SteelersDepot.com, a place to get your latest and greatest Steelers information. And I'm David Todd. It's Season 8, Episode 54, and it's Bengals Week, and everybody gets a nice free weekend as to watch whatever football, the college football championship games, and, of course, NFL on Sunday as the Steelers play the Bengals at Paul Brown Stadium on Monday night, Dave. And with the change in the schedule being a Monday night game, the Steelers came out with their first injury report yesterday. And, you know, we got a glimpse as to what to expect. And good news on Juju. And I won't rule anybody, you know, the rest of the group out, but not very positive news. And certainly for somebody like Vance McDonald, who's been a longer term injury now, he would be the guy who, not being able to go the first day of practice, you probably assume that Vance can't go, and a couple of other guys on the list as well.
Yeah, I didn't hear a word you said. I moved on from this Zay Jones video. You've got me on the let's make a deal problem now, and I've got one of those simulators running in one of the browsers here. Absolutely fascinating. And I think a few of our listeners
the Monty Hall problem.
Yeah, the Monty Hall problem. Entertain them as well too. No, in all seriousness, happy Friday, happy December, happy Bengals week, man. Quite a great day to be alive, if you ask me. And, you know, the Steelers, of course, playing on Monday night this week. That means we're going to be able to watch football on Saturday, football on Sunday all day, and then get ready for Bengals hosting the Steelers. And as you mentioned, the injury report, the first official one of the week came out on Thursday. And, you know, I hate to say not overly surprising, but I mean it's really not overly surprising. I don't reckon. The biggest news, I think, the fact that Juju Smith-Schuster indeed practiced fully with that hamstring. Now five other players sat out, but if you kind of read in between the lines of what Mike Tomlin said on Tuesday, probably not overly surprising. Joe Hayden, of course, has been ruled out for the game with the fractured fibula, and look, he's not going to play against the Ravens, as we talked about the other day. You know, it'll be interesting to see if he makes it back for the game against New England, and you know, I'll bet against that right now. But straight, you know, it sounds like they've left the light on for that to happen. Mike Mitchell and Ryan Shazier, both who you know kind of had minor ankle injuries, I guess, in that game against the Packers, both sat out. I'm guessing that both will be able to practice on Friday. It would be a concern if either didn't. So we'll look for that later on today. Vance McDonald is the one you know still sitting out with that ankle, and man, you know, he's already missed two games, and then you know, you have a little bit of a longer week this week, and he's not practicing the first day this week. That's a bit concerning. So we'll see what happens on Friday with him. You want to talk about one guy that they sure might miss this week, and that's Vance McDonald, because from the run blocking aspect, if you go back and look you know, at that game the last time around against the Bengals back in Week 7, I thought he did a lot of good things in that game. So keep your fingers crossed that Vance McDonald, you know, they need guys to help out with a little bit of those larger defensive ends, if you ask me. So keep your fingers crossed there. The other guy not to practice, James Harrison, this time with a knee, David. And for as banged up as James Harrison has been on those 29 snaps that he's played this season, he sure hasn't missed a beat in
a lot of injury reports.
And he hasn't missed a beat in the weight room, you know, on top of it there. So, you know, I'm not even going to, you know, people, if they're not listening to this podcast and don't know my thoughts on James Harrison or either that or don't want to believe it, you know, whatever. It'll be surprising if he dresses against the Bengals, and I think surprising You know, I think he will be active another game or two this season. I just don't know when. But even if he is, it's just hard envisioning him playing many snaps, David.
Yeah. Okay. So, my guess would be Mitchell probably goes if he's able to get some work in. Shazier sounded like this was no big deal. He was, he was being interviewed by the NFL Network and didn't look like he had a lot of bulk on his ankle. He's, kind of standing around. That seems, again, that would make sense to be precautionary with him. I would guess Vance McDonald doesn't go and Harrison's going to be a scratch for this one. That would be my early take on where things are.
Real quick, I mean, let's look at the Bengals injury report because there's a couple significant names on that as far as guys that did not practice on Thursday for them. Vincent Ray, kind of a backup linebacker with a hamstring. Nick Vigil, now that's a starter for them with an ankle, and he left that game against and went back and of course watching the Bengals Browns game, he left that game with that ankle injury. That might be a concern for them. So, watch the injury report on Friday, see if he works. And, of course, the team will have to release an injury report on Saturday with the game on Monday this coming week as well, too. That could be a little bit of a loss for them. An even potentially bigger loss would be Sean Williams with a hamstring injury. And now Sean Williams, of course, is one of their two safeties. And in my opinion, Sean Williams, David, is probably – one of the more underrated safeties in the league as well. So, he did not work on Thursday. Him and Nick Vigil are two names to potentially watch over the course of the next 2 weeks on their injury report. Limited on the Bengals on Thursday, and it doesn't seem to be a big deal with them, or tight end Tyler Croft with a wrist, and Cedric Abue with a shoulder there. I don't think those are going to be issues with either of those two guys. So, once again, the names to watch will be Nick Vigil and Sean Williams on Friday and Saturday with the Bengals.
Okay, so, it feels like kind of a quiet week for whatever reason. And, the big picture of the NFL, where we stand right now, certainly in a lot of the national publications and media outlets, you talk to analysts, the league has separated itself. From, 3 weeks ago, we heard all about how there's parity and there's no good teams in the league. And it just shows you everybody wants a narrative to grasp, to hold on to that they can, pontificate around. And it was, there are no good teams. Well, clearly there are at least two good teams right now in the Patriots and the Eagles. And depending on what you think of the Steelers, they'd probably be next in that group. And if you want to put I was on another podcast this week and I was asked about, this fixation that the Steelers themselves and maybe the Steeler fans for sure have on the Patriots and whether it's warranted and whether the Steelers should be, concerned about the Patriots, the fans should be concerned about New England. The answer is hell yeah. I mean, there's no doubt that the Patriots have earned their position of respect. And it's like any team that is dynastic over a period of time. And whether you want to look just around the corner in Pittsburgh at the Penguins and, whether they play great and sit atop the standings or they go through tough stretches, everybody's going to be worried about the Penguins because the makeup of the team is generally the same as it has been. And they just won the last two Stanley Cups. Well, everybody should be worried about the Patriots because Tom Brady's playing quarterback. Bill Belichick's the coach, and they're 9-2 as well. And they've shown that they can do kind of whatever they want to do offensively over the years. They will find your weakness and they will exploit it. Whether that means run the ball 50 times or throw the ball 50 times, they'll do what they think is necessary to win the game, and they'll have a plan of attack to do that. And they have shored up. It appears they have shored up defensively. What they need to do. And so they're going to kind of roll through the end of their schedule, much like the Steelers is backloaded with even more divisional games. And they're going to sit there, one or two. And the Steelers and the Patriots are going to play. Obviously, this has been the focus and the talk about, Mike Tomlin commenting on it, which is completely meaningless stuff in my mind. They'll meet in week 15 and the winner will probably have home field advantage. And it certainly doesn't mean that the loser is out. And it doesn't mean if the Steelers lose, they're out, but they're going to go into this as the second favorite in the AFC, almost regardless of what happens the rest of the way. Barring an injury, a major injury to either team, that's kind of how they're going to set up. Even if the Steelers win the game and they're the number one seed, they might be a point or two favorite when they play the Patriots at home. But this is what it is. In the league right now, if you look, Dave, from my perspective, we talked a little bit about it the other day, is the AFC is the Patriots won, clearly. The Steelers are next, clearly. And then there's a drop-off to whomever you think is in that conversation. And it would consist of, in my mind, the Jags, the Chargers, the Chiefs. And if you want to throw the Titans in there, they'd won a bunch of games in a row until the Steelers beat them. That's probably your next group. And then, you know, right in that is, I guess, the Ravens maybe, and then the Bengals. And they're still in it. So these two games for Cincinnati and Baltimore are they're two more big weeks for them. They are definitely still in things. So, you know, these games are, while they don't appear to have a ton of meaning for the Steelers, except for this home field advantage issue in terms of making the playoffs, still significant games here. And just to finish the thought on the other side, you have the Eagles, and then you have a lot of teams that I think are pretty good teams, from the Rams, the Vikings we've discussed. And, you know, you can go through the list of who you want to put in there, whether it's after that, you know, kind of where the Lions and the Seahawks are and the Saints and all the teams in the South, the three good teams in the South, the Saints, the Falcons, and the Panthers. So, you know, just the whole idea here as we get down the stretch, Dave, this is an incredibly important game for the Bengals. The league has taken shape to divide the kind of the haves and the have-nots and the teams that are left playing. And the Steelers are going to face two desperate teams in the division here the next 2 weeks.
You know, the only thing about all this talk this past week about the Patriots game is now, of course, it's going to set up an easy discussion / narrative if the Steelers lose either one of these two games to the Bengals or the Ravens. It'll be, well, there you go. The Steelers are looking ahead to the Patriots, and now they've lost, i.e. one or two of the games leading up to it, and now because of that, the Patriots game is almost fairly meaningless. So that's the only, to me, that can anything. I've thought about this long and hard, and look, I understand Tony Dungy and Mike Tomlin go way back, and I understand, and we talked about this the other day. Mike Tomlin was damned if he did, and damned if he didn't. In that interview with Tony Dungy, once he asked him to not give him coach speak per se, yes, they all think about it. I mean, they're crazy not to think about it. Mike Mitchell, as much this past week, said you have to be a blankety blank to not think about it. It's all he's thought about since the AFC Championship game last year. Look, obviously the Patriots are they're the best until you prove otherwise with them. But and it's okay to think about, hey, that game is obviously going to be a big game. But if you don't take care of business against the Bengals on Monday night and the Ravens next week, that game really might not matter. Now, technically, I guess you could say the Steelers can lose one of these next two games against the Bengals and or the Ravens. One of those two, as long as they beat New England. If they beat New England and then, of course, run the table against Houston and Cleveland, well, then they'll have number one seed, in the AFC because they beat the Patriots head-to-head. So, technically, yes, you can lose one of these next two games. But, I mean, if you do that and you lose to the Patriots, then you really have to start looking at the standings at that point. And, maybe at that point, David, the game against the Texans, and for all that, for all we know, maybe the game against definitely the game against the Browns becomes really irrelevant. And then you get into the aspect of, well, do we want to sit, Ben and whoever for that game? So, all of this talk about Tomlin and what he had to say about the Patriots and a few of these other players will all be meaningless if they beat the Bengals and they beat the Ravens. If they lose one or both those games, well, then we're going to talk about or we'll be forced to talk about other people talking about, well, the Steelers are looking ahead to the Patriots, and that's why that happened. Make sense?
Yeah, I mean, looking ahead to your schedule today and talking about the Patriots doesn't impact the Steelers' preparation for Cincinnati. And they're going to go out there. These are going to be hard games for the Steelers because of the fact that the other teams are desperate teams. You see it. We see it all the time that, you know, when one team's playing for their life and it's, you know, it's human nature that, you know, we saw it, you know, the Cowboys at home, three bad games. And then, you know, they look great last night in terms of what they're able to do offensively. You score 22 points in three games. And they almost scored that in the first half against the Skins last night. The Bengals have, as we heard from Paul on Wednesday, Andy Dalton under the radar has had a really good stretch of games here the last 5 or 6 weeks with a passer rating combined over 100. So he's been, you know, he's held up his part of the bargain. You know, we've talked consistently about kind of the talent on the other side of the ball, and now Joe Mixon has kind of a little bit of a breakout game last week. We know what AJ Green brings to the table. So, you know, this is a dangerous game in my mind. This is a really dangerous game. Probably the more dangerous of the two for me. Look, the Steelers, they'll play the Ravens in Pittsburgh next week. That's obviously advantageous. Even though the Steelers have an extraordinarily good record in Paul Brown Stadium, I look at this as it's still a road game. Some of those games the Steelers have won in Cincinnati in years past, the playoff game in particular, they've snuck through because of very unusual circumstances. You know, I don't see the Steelers going in and blowing the Bengals out in this game. So, you know, Dave, my concern level's high on this one.
Well, I mean, Ben Roethlisberger's always seemingly played great in Cincinnati. You throw in the factor that it's a primetime game, and I think the Steelers in the last, depending on what you want to call the Patriots game in the AFC Championship, if that was primetime, if you want to put a time and say, you know, games that start after 7 Eastern time or whatever, the Steelers are like 10-0 in their last 10 games, primetime, if you will. Ben, plays well in Cincinnati. Dalton doesn't seem to play all that well in prime time. You take into account what happened, back in week 7, especially in the second half of that game. Even so, you got to throw all that, I think, out the window when it comes to these two teams playing, because you're right. Bengals, like it or not, they're still alive in things at 5-6. If they lose this game, though, they really going to have to run the table and then pray for a lot of stuff to happen. Andy Dalton, look, they've won some games, and that's the goal here. The last two, the games against Denver and the games against Cleveland. I didn't think Andy Dalton played all that well against Cleveland. I thought he should have been picked off a couple of times in that game, to be quite honest with you. If you look at what Dalton has done even since the last time the Bengals met the Steelers, he hasn't thrown an interception. So that's key talking point number one. I mean, and we say it all the time. You don't turn the football over, you're going to have a great chance to win a game in the NFL. He has thrown at least 2 touchdowns in, I think, 4 of those games. The one game that he didn't, I think, was against the Jaguars, and it's probably not overly surprising there. He's not thrown for a lot of yardage since the Steelers last played him, and really you don't have to. Now, the running game, Mixon did have a better game against the Browns, but I saw somebody this week post something on Twitter. It says this time next year we're going to be talking about Joe Mixon as a top 5 NFL running back. And if you remember, before that even happened, I asked our buddy Paul about that as well too. To me, he has some good skill sets, but You know, I'm still not ready to say that he's going to be a top five running back in this league. And if you look, and I don't know how much you want to put on the offensive line, David, but he only has a 33.3% success rate so far this season. Now, the rest of the backs and a few carries that they've had, of course, Jeremy Hill's on IR now. Giovanni Bernard's not getting a lot of work. Their combined success rate is a tick lower than Mixon's. All right, so now Mixon is obviously your best option of the three. But before we go anointing Joe Mixon as one of the – I think Mixon only has two runs over 20 yards this season, David, and one of them came against the Steelers back in week seven. He got a lot of zero and negative yard runs this season. In short, I guess what I'm trying to say is I don't see the visible evidence. I think people are just taking a dart and throwing that at the board right now and living off of what Joe Mixon did in college in saying that they believe he'll be a top five back. I view him more maybe of a Jay Ajayi than anything else right now, but we'll see. I mean, he did have a better game against the Browns, but once again, that was the Browns. So definitely a big you want to measure and stick for the Bengals this week. It's the Steelers. You're going up against a defense that really since early in the season has shored up their run defense. Even going back to the game, last time around against the Bengals, that's really when things started to, in my opinion, turn around for the Steelers' run defense that had at that time given up, six, seven, eight explosive runs. That's the big thing with Joe Mixon is you just don't want to let him, 70 yard you, if you will. We've seen the Steelers do that earlier this season. So their offensive line, like I said, I don't know how much you want to put on their offensive line for their running game not being great this year. But in a few minutes, we're gonna have the same conversation about a certain running back in Pittsburgh and a certain five and six guys that he's been running behind as well.
Okay, so let's have that conversation about Le'Veon Bell and where he is and it's interesting here, as we move down the stretch, we're going to be asking this question soon enough. It's December 1st, and the best case scenario is 2 months from now on February 1st that the Steelers have one game left. So, we might be seeing the end of Le'Veon Bell's Steelers career right here over the next 2 months. So, Le'Veon Bell, Dave, how's he done this season? What do you think? I mean, I retweeted a stat yesterday that was out there in terms of yards out of the shotgun. And Le'Veon Bell by far is the leader in yards out of the shotgun for running backs, but I'm not sure that that's a meaningful stat at all. He was the only back on the list of 10 or so that he was the only back on the list who had an average below 4.1 yards a carry. His was at 3.7. A lot of those guys were averaging 5 and 6 yards a carry. One of the thoughts is, again, when you're in the shotgun, you spread things out. You're obviously in the shotgun on third and long formations almost 100% of the time. So maybe that opens up, yards that are not necessarily meaningful yards. So this stat in and of itself doesn't necessarily mean that much, but just a big picture. Le'Veon Bell, what do you think?
And look, I mean, how many offenses run out of the shotgun now? I mean, they're all kind of it's kind of rare to see back-to-back snaps by a quarterback underneath the center these days, right? I mean,
yeah.
It's all kind of, the influence of the college game and the spread and working the quarterback out of the shotgun is pretty much, it happens almost on a down-by-down basis these days in the NFL. Now, a lot of people are going to take the analysis that I've done on and my thoughts on Bell right now as negative in me being down on him. Let me start off by saying that without a doubt, Le'Veon Bell is probably still the best all-around running back in the league. And that, of course, running the football, catching the ball out of the backfield, and pass protection. Man, just go back to that. You want to see pass protection, just go back to that game against the Titans, just a few weeks ago. You want to see just how good Le'Veon Bell is in pass protection. Obviously, as a pass catcher, all you have to do is look back at this game from Sunday night against the Packers. I mean, set a set a new Steelers record for a single game receptions by a running back there. Now, have his receptions, the yards after and the total yards gained equaled what he's done up until this season? No. I mean, he's down, I think, his per reception average and per yards after reception numbers are down based on what he's put up early in his career. Is that just because, teams are doing a better job of keeping guys kind of closer to the line of scrimmage? Well, that might very well be the case. And in fact, I think kind of Roethlisberger hinted at that this past week, talking about why Bell was used so much in the passing game, against the Packers, was the fact that they really were giving him a lot of room to get free. And as you know, if you get the ball in Bell's hands and he's out in space, he's probably going to make a guy miss or two. And a couple of those, he certainly did. Now, we're talking about Bell as a pure running back. You know how I like to measure these guys, David. I like to use the successful run rate, and then also I like to look at their runs of say 10 yards or more, and then the number of runs that they've had that have ended in negative yardage. Now, thanks to Joe Thomas, what was it, earlier this year, I'm starting to look at running backs using my success rate and using what Joe Thomas and what he claims the Browns and several other teams use as far as successful play rates. If you're just joining the podcast, or a quick recap, the one that Pro Football I think Reference and Outsiders uses as success rate is on first down. If a play achieves 45% of the needed yardage, it's a successful play. In short, if a play gains 4.5 yards or more on first and 10, that's a successful play. On second down, a play needs 60% of needed yards to be successful. And then obviously on third and fourth down, 100% of the yardage needed for that play to be deemed successful. To recap what Joe Thomas said, what did he say, Dave? 4 yards.
He said four yards to carry a first down or a touchdown. So obviously you get the sense of, generally, you have first and 10, so 4 yards would jive with that. Now, obviously, if it's a first and 20, that's why using some different things make a little difference. But if you're getting 4 yards on second down, you understand the concept. And the idea is to not penalize anybody if they have short touchdown runs or first down runs.
Right, exactly. And don't penalize somebody for a 4 yard, I guess. Don't penalize a running back for a 4 yard gain on second and 12, or second and 15. There's some gray areas still in there still, I think. What I did is I said, okay, I want to look at the old successful rate, and then I want to look at the new successful rate, or what Joe Thomas is preaching out there.
Right, and the assumption is these are going to be relatively close, right?
Exactly. I just wanted to show both of them. So here's where Le'Veon Bell is on what I would deem the old successful rate, using the 45%, 60%, and 100% method. He has a rate this year of 38.5%. Now, that's probably about league average, David. I haven't double checked that. I mean, it's a lot to compile, but league average in this league when it comes to success rates is not overly good. In fact, if you go back to last year, Bell's success rate was 46%. So we're talking a 7.5% difference in his success rate from this year to last year. You go back to 2015. Now that was the season that he only played eight games. Or even that he was injured, in week 8, I think, that season. 39.8% success rate. You go back to 2014, he had a 44% success rate, and his rookie season 38.1%. So he's flirting with career low in a success rate as far as that goes. Now, when you look at the Joe Thomas method, he has a 50% success rate. However, comma, last year using that same formula, he had a 54% success rate. And to be quite honest with you, for his entire career, his 50% success rate using that methodology of computing it would be a career low right now. You also look at percentage of plays that he's lost yardage on. I wanted to use just percentage of plays that gained 0 yards and negative yards, but I figured I'll just stick to the lost yardage percentage. 9.5% of his runs this year have been negative yardage. Last year, David, that number was 5%. Okay, that's 4.5% of 200 something runs. I mean, that starts adding up. You know, it's a couple, two or three a game. You look back at 2015.
Well, it's 4.5% of a couple. So we're talking about 10 runs. So of, you know, of 200, it's, you know, nine runs out of 200. So out of 300, it'd be, you know, about 13. So, you know, maybe a run a game.
Okay. But, definitely higher. I mean, it's almost double the percentage of what he had last year. Not as high as 2015. Once again, I think these not, and I didn't run them, I think these numbers would skew a little bit more if I would have used no gains versus runs instead of negative yards runs. All right, move on past that stat. Now, the runs of 10 yards or greater. I like to use that now because, especially with Bell, because Bell's just not going to give you 20 yard. I mean, he can. I mean, he has in the past, but I mean, he's not that guy that compiles, you know, 20 yard runs. So looked at runs of 10 yards. Or longer, only 9.5% of those of his runs this year have been that distance. Last year it was 14.2%. Year before that, 11.5%. The year before that, 11.7%. And then his rookie season was 5.3%. So I think across the board, what I'm getting at here, and there, you know, I don't believe that you can point to the offensive line, or maybe you can. Overall, this running game for the Steelers is not, and I said this the other day, you know, in the podcast when we were talking about the things that we'd like to see improved on offense. This running game is not where it should be right now, and you know, it's good enough to obviously to get them to 9-2. It's good enough, I think, to beat the beat the Bengals and the Ravens these next 2 weeks. But with that said, is it good enough to beat teams like the Patriots when you're trying to do your best to keep Tom Brady off the field? Is it good enough to win that one game during the playoffs where your defense is, you know, isn't able to stop an opposing offense? I'm not so sure. So this is definitely going to be something to watch, I think, in these final, you know, five games down the stretch. We're really four, because hopefully the Cleveland game doesn't mean all that much, if anything, to the Steelers. So, you know, and then this kind of leads to a discussion, David. Yes, Bell is leading the league in yardage. Yes, he's leading in carries and snaps played by a running back. Does having the biggest junk pile, not that it's junk, it's just that's the best analogy that I can use. Does that equate into meaningful? And I guess what I'm getting at here is this some sort of a decline in Bell that, especially in a season where he's going to have, 400 something maybe touches, is this something that's kind of a look into the future here? And I guess what I'm getting at, is this something that people should be concerned about when looking at whether or not to give him the franchise tag during the offseason?
Well, it's a great question, and I don't know. You know, it's one of these things where the time to look back, the time to probably make good assessments of this for any player is really – when their career's over. It's very hard to kind of look into the future and assess where there's a dividing line between, you know, things started to not go as well. We've seen, you know, we saw different games this year where Le'Veon Bell didn't look like he had quite the jump that he had before. And Dave, I'm trying to remember which game it was recently, whether it was the Colts game just one game where he just didn't look like he was kind of hitting the hole or exploding around the edge. What was the game where he couldn't turn the corner a couple times? It looks like he was bouncing something out around the side inside the 10-yard line, and I thought he definitely was going to score, and he didn't. Do you remember?
It was either the Detroit or the Indy game, I think.
It was the Detroit game. You're right. I think that's what it was. And just didn't look like, you know, look, we know Le'Veon Bell, partially because of his running style and partially because of his top-end speed, you're not going to see him have a 90-yard run like Leonard Fournette did against the Steelers. You're not going to see him, you know, kind of run like Juju did in that game against – was that the Lions game?
Right.
Where you know, he defensive backs were kind of even and never gained a step on him. It's just not going to get that. Ideally with Le'Veon Bell is you're going to get a guy falling forward all the time who's going to get you 5 yards every time on average that he touches the ball, and he's going to find holes where there aren't there, and he's going to get, you know, a lot of 10 to 15 yard gains. And so, you know, I don't know. He got off to a slow start in the season. That game against Detroit was disconcerting. And then we saw him, you know, in a couple of the games since then really show some flash. And, of course, this past weekend against the Packers, he's 185 yards from scrimmage and did some stuff catching the ball that was as good as we've seen. So, you know, if I were banking on Le'Veon Bell's numbers next year, I would bank on them being right where they've been in years past. If he gets the number of touches that he's had this year, seems to be in line, down a touch. You know, and you know, that is the right question to ask. Is this the start of a, you know, slow, gradual slide going forward? I still don't believe, you know, in a very small box, as we started the show talking about Le'Veon Bell's future, I still don't believe Le'Veon Bell will be a Steeler next year, kind of 55-45 that he won't, because they won't franchise him. But, you know, I usually bet all of Dave's money in his house. I wouldn't bet a dime on that. I don't have any conviction to kind of where that's going. And certainly, you know, we'll see what happens over the rest of the season. But it's clear that, you know, James Conner, we knew this at the beginning of the year, and a lot of people didn't kind of agree with our assessment that Le'Veon Bell was going to be the guy and the only guy, but he has been the guy and the only guy all year long.
And once again, just because these percentages are down, you know, he's still the best all-around back right now in the league, okay? Now, as far as if you were counting on him as a pure runner, though, if he didn't do those other two things that he does, then, you know, there would be more reason for concern. But even so, David, you're getting into these we're in December now. This is the month where, you know, and then on through, where it really is nice, depending on weather situations, because you're not going to know really, you know, on a week-by-week basis and maybe even a day or two out, what the conditions might be like. Go back to that game against Buffalo last year, right? That was a game where they really needed the running game, and he was able to provide it. Can this offense provide a more than stable and consistent running game when they need it the most? And I think Monday night, David, and the next game again, well, really the next three games, at least
great test of where this team is.
I think at least two of these games are, you know, they're going to have to be able to run the football almost on command. I mean, you got one thing that really stuck out, David, in this game against the Packers was what they had 13 third down opportunities, and only three of them were more than 6 yards needed for a first down. Okay, and only one of those was a 3rd and 10. We saw earlier in this season how this offense, whether it be negative runs, you know, maybe an early a sack on first or second down, or a, as Keith Butler would say, a dadgum penalty, they get themselves into these just too many third and seven or longer situations. And like it or Superman cape and all, you just can't ask this offense to continually have to convert these type situations. And I think that's one thing that really stood out in the Packers game is they stayed out of third and unmanageable situations. And they're going to have to do that in these next, three games, most definitely. David, do you remember what the Steelers' third down stats were? Now, don't look. What the Steelers' third down stats were in the first meeting between the Bengals?
I think they were great, right? They went right down the field in that first drive and went 5 for 5, and they scored right down the field on the second drive, and then they had a couple three and outs. I'm going to guess they were, above 50%.
Is this going to be a case for recency bias?
What's the answer?
2 of 11.
Okay, so F minus for me on that one.
I mean, is that recency bias? Is that an example of recency bias?
No, so it's an example of me getting it wrong, remembering the drive wrong. Now that I remember that opening drive, they only had one third down. I think they went right down the field without having to convert third downs. But I my recollection was they had the other part of that is they kicked a lot of field goals in the second half. Remember, the 29 points was, I think they had two touchdowns in the first half, and then, they absolutely stuffed the Bengals in the second half, but they didn't do a great job of putting the Bengals away. It was field goal after field goal after field goal. So on second reflection, yes, that makes sense.
Okay, and looking back here at the situational yardage needed, they even had – they had 3 third-and-ones in this game. That was
third and one hell. Was that game?
Trying to remember here. No,
that was a different game, right? Because that was at night.
Right. They had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 third downs where they needed 6 yards or less. Okay, and. One of the 3rd and 13s they got 12 yards on did not convert. A 3rd and 8, one of the ones that they did convert, a 3rd and 8 they converted to Antonio Brown for 19 yards. 3rd and 5 they converted that was that dump off to Le'Veon Bell where he bounced Drake Kirkpatrick off the turf for 23 yards. That was a that. Where he dribbled better.
And all credit to Dre. All credit to Dre.
He bounced for
bouncing up like a pinball, like a bowling pin, right back up and helping make the tackle.
Looked like a yo-yo, didn't it?
Exactly.
Third and 8, they converted on a pass to Antonio Brown for 19 yards. So, overall, they had done a decent job of staying out of third and long situations in that game. They just didn't. Now, one of those third downs was a 24-yard field goal by Chris Boswell. So that one, obviously doesn't count there. But you're going to be playing in a hostile environment this time around. You've done recently a decent job of keeping yourself out of third and long situations and converting those shorter ones there. They definitely have to do a better job of that this time around against the Bengals. And, we're probably not going to see much no huddle, because here's another thing that kind of surprised me, David. The last 3 games against the Bengals in Cincinnati, the Steelers haven't used a lick of no huddle, okay? And if you go back to earlier this season when the Steelers played the Chiefs on the road in Kansas City, they didn't use a lick of no huddle in that game. So even though Ben Roethlisberger was on his radio show this week and said, I don't see why we would not be able to use no huddle. If they, outside of maybe a end of the first half situation where you get the ball and you're trying to move down the field, getting field goal range, or God forbid at the end of the game where they're having to play catch up, I wouldn't expect much no huddle at all in this game. And back to Le'Veon Bell to kind of finish the thought on that before we move forward here. I just think they've got to start running the ball better, David, most definitely in these next three games. It'll be interesting to see how much. Remember, Roosevelt Knicks played like 20 or 22 snaps in the last game against the Bengals. In the past, we've seen the Steelers be able to run that counter, pulling their guards with success against the Bengals. And once again, if they don't have Vance McDonald in this game, boy, you really don't. That doesn't set up for that. So, just my general thoughts on Le'Veon Bell. I don't think he's washed up by any stretch of the imagination, but I don't think we're dealing with the same production out of Le'Veon Bell, or definitely not that we saw last year. And with James Conner, I think if you would have polled both of us before, maybe we talked about this, David. I think at this time of year, I would have, man, maybe I did. I would have predicted a few more snaps and carries for James Conner than what he has now. And the question becomes is, do you try to force more snaps and carry? Look, when he's been on the field and he's carried the football, it hasn't been awful.
No, it's been good. It's been good. He runs hard, no question about it. But the answer is no, I don't think so. I don't think they'll change anything here.
Yeah, and
I think Le'Veon Bell's going to get his touches.
And I think the main thing I think a lot of this stems back to is they just don't trust James Conner in situations where Ben might have to check out of a play and put James Conner in a pass protection situation. I think what happened in that game against the Jaguars on that interception earlier in the season kind of was a pass fail for James Conner. And I think too, now look, you've got a guy in Toussaint now on this roster. If there was, and I said this last week, if when he was promoted, or when was he promoted on, when was he promoted? Saturday?
2 weeks ago, last week, yeah.
On Saturday. Yeah. So we obviously didn't get a chance to say that, but if there was ever maybe a game where you'd maybe like to see Toussaint get some snaps or could give you some decent snaps, maybe it's Monday night in Cincinnati, David, because we know he can pass protect. Anytime you use the name Fitzgerald Toussaint now, everybody wants to think about is that fumble against the Broncos. I think he deserves a little bit more credit than that. Obviously, he's a different runner than Le'Veon Bell. And correct me if I'm wrong, David. A couple of years ago in the playoffs, I thought Toussaint and who was it at the time? Our boy, drawing a blank. Kick return, a guy they never would put back their kick. Jordan Todman.
Watson.
Jordan Todman,
right.
I thought they had some decent carries, together. But I would like to maybe potentially see game circumstances providing it. Maybe Toussaint get a few snaps to get Le'Veon Bell off the field, because push come to shove, Bell is going to crack the 300 touch mark Monday night. And there will be four games after that. So, I mean, barring something unforeseen, he's going to hit that 400 touch mark this season. And, boy, you sure would kind of like him a little bit fresher for that game against the Patriots and then obviously for the playoffs.
Okay, so I'm with you on all of that. Good analysis. So should we knock out our picks?
Does Mike Tomlin deserve to be in the talk of defensive coach of the year?
Defensive coach?
Coach of the year, NFL coach of the year.
No, I mean, it doesn't mean he's not having a good year, but look, I mean, start with the kid for the Rams. And if he doesn't win it, then you move on to the Eagles and then, move on to, a couple other teams in the conversation. Might be in the top five, but, the Steelers were a preseason favorite and they're here now. So, when expectations are that high going in, it's just like Belichick's not going to be in the conversation either.
Yeah, and that's my thoughts on it as well, too, and what I wrote in the post after Nate Burleson kind of stumped for Mike Tomlin on Good Morning Football yesterday is the fact that not a one of us out there didn't think that might, you know, this team had a potential to compete for a Super Bowl this year. And, oh, yeah, here they are, you know, 11 games in, and they're doing exactly, I guess where he's trying, where Nate Burleson's trying to make a point is because of all this drama that the team's been able to overcome, does that you know, help Mike Tomlin's cause anymore? And some would say, well, he shouldn't have let that drama happen and you know, done a better job of preventing that drama in the first place. And obviously that's, you know, you can't put that all on Tomlin. But, yeah, I'm with you. I think his name should be out there on the peripheral, but no way in heck do I think he's going to win it this year because of the coach and with the Rams and what Peterson's doing in Philadelphia, and you could probably throw another name or two out there as well too. Look, I mean, if the Ravens make the playoffs,
how about Sean Payton?
And yeah, how about Sean Payton with what he's been able to do? I mean, look, it's kind of hard to make a case for Harbaugh, but I mean, geez, that team's had a ton of damn injuries this year, and their offense hasn't been great on top of it. I mean, it's almost like they go into a game with one arm tied behind their back every week. But I'm not saying Harbaugh deserves it over Tomlin by any stretch, but I think a lot of our listeners out there could come up with two or three candidates, you know, better deserving than Mike Tomlin at this point.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's one of those, again, you look back at the list, you know, Greg Popovich's and you know, Bill Belichick's and the greatest coaches ever, they don't generally win Coach of the Year awards because they're constantly there and the expectations are so high. So Coach of the Year doesn't Coach of the Year is an award that's given to a team that outperforms expectations. And when expectations are high, it's tough to win that award.
All right. So real quick, yeah. about the Bengals defense here. We haven't really looked at it much at that side or Bengals. The Bengals offense versus the Steelers defense, I should say. Cody Sensabaugh versus, you know, AJ Green on that side, I think, is your biggest concern in this game. I don't think we're going to see the Steelers. I mean, look, they stay on their sides. You're not going to see Artie Burns or anybody follow anybody around whatsoever. But I think we're, you know, if you're able to do what they've been able to do against AJ Green a lot in these most recent games against the Bengals, I think that's your number one concern. Andy Dalton, I think, only threw three deep passes against the Browns in this game this past week. I'm not overly concerned about, you know, any of those young wide receivers that might dress. I think you do have to watch these backs out of the backfield and why the hell they still don't continue, you know, to try to force that more into the game. I don't know. Their offensive line, even though they've played a little bit together now, Mike Tomlin made sure to point out the continuity that the Bengals seemingly have since the last time they played them. This offensive line is offensive line that you still should be able to dominate, not only in the trenches, but, you know, with your pass rush as well too. So, you know, I'm looking at you, Bud Dupree. I'm looking at you, T.J. Watt. You're gonna have to have some pressure somewhere, you know, from the defensive line in this game, because once again, I think the biggest concerning matchup in this game is giving Andy Dalton too much time and having AJ Green on a guy like Cody Sensabaugh. I'm not concerned about Joe Mixon either.
I'm concerned about the Bengals offense. I'm certainly concerned about AJ and Mixon and this tight end kid. I think is Croft is a little better than maybe. He's not on most people's radar. Let's put it that way. Let's see what he does in this game. I've got concerns in this one, kind of as the concerns are as big as any game that I remember here recently. So I guess I was concerned about the Lions as well, which maybe with good reason. Okay, Dave, you got me on another point last night. You were spot on the Cowboys who smoked the Redskins. And we've got a full slate, no buys this week, right? We're done with the buys?
Yeah, that would be, you are correct, sir.
All right, so let's get to what we got going this week and kick things off with,
Detroit and Baltimore, right?
Detroit, big one, right out of the chute. The Lions at the Ravens. The Ravens 3-point favorites. This is, you know, Detroit. You know, got off badly on Thursday on Thanksgiving against the Vikings. That was a costly loss for them. So they're playing for their lives. The Ravens. I was looking at some numbers last night, and all these projections are calculated slightly different ways. But if you look most places, the Ravens are 60-70% odds of making the playoffs. Now, if the Ravens lose this game and lose to the Steelers next week, that's going to change dramatically. So this is a must-win game for the Ravens in my book. So I'm going to take the Lions plus 3. It's pretty much a must-win game for the Lions, too.
Yeah, really. I mean, and you know, playing in Baltimore, obviously going to be tough. Matthew Stafford was a little bit dinged up, I thought, but he's had some extra days off here. That Baltimore defense, we've said it all year, that Baltimore defense is very good. We'll find out how good they are because Stafford's a good quarterback, and they got some weapons over there. I'm not saying Baltimore loses this outright, but I think Detroit covers. So give me them points.
Okay. The Niners with Jimmy Garoppolo at quarterback on the road against the Bears and Mitch Trubisky. This would be, you know, that makes this game mildly interesting from that matchup. Trubisky seems to have settled in a little bit, but it's not a particularly good Bears team. And I imagine I would think maybe John Fox is playing out the string here. I don't know if he's going to get another year. Obviously, Shanahan, this is kind of week one for Kyle Shanahan and Jimmy Garoppolo together. He came in at the last minute of the game last week and threw a touchdown pass. Dave, is 3 enough to take the Niners?
Boy, I you know, look, this is when you really want to get a good look at Garoppolo, and he's been, you know, he's been with the team for a few weeks now. He should know what's going on. And this is a Bears, you know, you got a rookie on the other side still trying to feel his way around. Man, I would hope San Francisco would be able to win this outright, David. And I'm going to play this one as well, too. So give me the straight-up money line on this one, plus the points.
I'm with you. I'll take the Niners. I'll take them. And I think they might win the game as well. Another great game at 1 o'clock. Atlanta hosting Minnesota. Falcons seemingly have turned things around a bit here. Julio Jones playing some great football, massive game last week with whatever he had, 200-plus yards receiving. Vikings getting 3 on the road, coming off a good road win in Detroit on Thursday, had a long week to prepare. Do you know, look, I know everybody's got the Eagles, but one of these two teams very well could be on the other side of that, or in these two teams could be in the NFC Championship game. They're both really good teams. Dave, I'm going to go with the upset here and kind of ride the Case Keenum train as everybody finds reasons to say bad things about Case Keenum and talk about bringing Teddy Bridgewater in, which I don't understand at all. So give me the Vikings plus 3.
Boy, you realize they've won 7 in a row?
So they lost once since losing to the Steelers? The Steelers played them in week 2, so it must be since then.
Yeah, they lost
to Detroit. To Detroit.
To Detroit, right. They lost to Detroit.
21-14 at home, right.
And then they won 7 in a row. I think this is where we get one of those hiccups right here. I think this is where after this game, people are going to say, I don't know, were we a little bit too bullish on the Minnesota Vikings? This will be one of those cause for concern games, in my opinion. So I'm going to take the Falcons straight up to win this outright and obviously to cover as well.
Okay, Pats minus 8.5 at Buffalo. Give me the Pats.
Man, how can you not, right? I mean, geez, I mean, how can you not? I mean, until we see something otherwise or an injury, boy, did you watch that Belichick tape session this week?
Yeah, always good. Every week it's great. It's great.
Man, I understand a lot of our listeners are anti-Pats and Belichick, this, that, and the other, but man, if you want one thing to make sure that you do every week, go watch those tape sessions with Scott Zolak and Bill Belichick. Now, obviously, they're not going to reveal too terribly much in it, but just that scissors route alone on that Gronkowski touchdown, David, where they knew that they were going to stress the linebacker in that situation there. Just little things like that. And look, you know, if you want one beef about what the Steelers don't do offensively, and maybe, you know, Ben Roethlisberger doesn't like a lot of these type of switch routes or scissor routes or stuff like that. It's that aspect. They don't, you know, the Patriots are on a different level when it comes to isolating just one single player in a defense. So once again, if you listen to this and you got some time over the weekend, go watch that Zolak Belichick video. If not for just the one Gronkowski play, give me the Patriots lay the points.
Denver -1.5 at Miami. I haven't even seen. Is Simeon back in at the starting position? I don't even know. For the Dolphins, I assume Cutler's going to be back for this one. So I don't know. Pick your poison here. Let me go against the grain. I imagine the whole world's going to be on the Broncos in this game, so I'll take the Dolphins.
Yeah, I'm going to go with the rest of the world. I think Trevor gives you a better chance to win. I just think top to bottom, look, that Denver defense is still the Denver defense. Boy, there are going to be questions about both these teams' head coaches. Obviously, Denver's got a new head coach, not going to do anything there. But did Miami underperform this year, David?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think everybody thought they overperformed last year, making the playoffs. Obviously, played the Steelers with Matt Moore at quarterback in that playoff game, went, you know, won 7 or 8 in a row and finished, I think, 10-6. So I think a lot of people expected them to step back. And the quarterback position without, it'll be interesting. Gase didn't. I don't think he's going to get fired. Losing what's his name? What is his name? The kid from A&M. Ryan Tannehill right before the start of the season, obviously put him behind the eight ball. Now, obviously, again, my personal bias is I would have rolled with Matt Moore. I don't think it would have made a difference. I don't think they'd be in a different spot than they are now. But the Cutler thing, and I'm a fan of Jay Cutler, but the thing hasn't really worked out for them offensively. And you have to be a little distressed with Gase is obviously distressed with the environment around the team in terms of attitude and professionalism. So that's not a great sign. He's trying to handle it. I hope he survives the year. I hope they win this game. But the answer is no. I think if they finish 8-8 or 7-9, they will have underperformed their own expectations, but not the markets.
Denver lay the points for me.
Okay, Titans -6.5 at home against the Texans. This will be a massive game for the Titans now. Even though they lost, they take over first place in the division. I'll take them here and expect a much better game from Marcus Mariota.
Yeah, give me Tennessee lay the points here.
Jags -9.5 against the Colts. I've been surprised that the Colts have been able to stay in all these games. I've been a seller, and I'm not a seller of Jacoby Brissett. I think he's done better than I've expected. This is where it comes off the rails, and the Jags in a blowout win here, well over the double digits. I'll lay the 9.5.
Did you watch Chuck Pagano's groundhog?
I had to turn it off after a minute. I was just like, this is nonsense.
Somebody needs to take that guy around back of the barn. Poor guy looks miserable, doesn't he?
He's not going to survive the offseason.
No, I don't think he is. He looks like he's ready to go now. Give me Jacksonville to blow out Indy.
Packers -2.5 against the Bucks. Jameis Winston will be back. For the Bucks, don't let the Packers' performance against the Steelers fool you. I got the Bucks on the road.
I don't know. Is Huntley getting a little comfortable there now? I mean, can we read anything into the performance against the Steelers? You know, outside of the four big plays that he had, will they be able to run the ball? They might be. I think they might get some Clay Matthews back. I don't know. This one's in Green Bay, David. Tough to play this time of year. Give me Green Bay later points.
Okay. Kansas City at the Jets. Oh,
boy, if Kansas City loses this one.
It really will be the end. It really will be the beginning of the end because they get the Chargers the next week. Give me the Jets +3. Yeah, I like the Jets.
I think something's gonna. Boy, if they can't get Kareem Hunt, if they can't get that running game on track up there in Chile, what's the weather? You spend a lot of time in New York. What's it gonna be like in New York this week?
I think it'll be. It's gonna be in the 40s. Just kind of a normal football Saturday.
Boy, I got a feeling that the Jets might win this one outright, David. So give me yellow.
So it's more normal football Sunday. Sorry, high of 52 to be specific.
Wow.
Partly cloudy.
Wow. Even so, give me the Jets to win this outright. So I want those points.
Yep, you and me. We're on the Jets. Another great game. Carolina, this is a 425 game. Carolina at the Saints. The Saints -4.5. They lost on the road. The Rams looked awfully good. Carolina's playing great here. I'm going to it didn't matter what this was. I would just take the points in this game. So I'll give me the Panthers +4.5, and I'm going to enjoy watching this one.
What do you think about the chances of this one being the NFC Championship game?
Vikings, Falcons, Panthers, Saints. Look, they're all right there for me. The NFC is good. The NFC is better than the AFC because they got a lot of teams like this who would be – if I were the Steelers, I wouldn't want to have to go through them before I played somebody else.
I tell you one thing that impressed me about Cam in that last game, just some of the checks that he made. I'm scared to death of this game. I'll take the home team, though. Give me the Saints to cover at home.
Chargers -13.5 against the Browns. I do think the Browns are making a little bit of progress. And by the way, the whole, all these articles that have been written, just, scathing articles about the Browns and the organization. Dave, if the Browns finish 0-16 and draft Sam Darnold or Josh Rosen, do they actually win? Isn't that what the whole rebuilding thing is? Somebody's like, they didn't get the quarterback. Whatever you think of DeShone Kizer, if you get to bring in one of those guys, then that kind of, does that justify the process to get there? It took the Astros a long time. It's taken the Sixers a long time. Of course, you still have to then go win when you do that. But that's where they are right now. They're not going to win this game. I'm going to lay the 13. I'm going to root for the Browns to keep it close. I'll take the points.
Well, did the Browns win a couple of years ago and then passed on Carson Wentz?
Well, right, they lost in their evaluation of Carson Wentz and maybe Jared Goff as well. So, I obviously don't see them do it. These guys are the general evaluation right now, at least from Kuiper and Jeremiah and from McShay, is that these two guys might be the two highest ranked quarterbacks coming into the draft, since you go back to Andrew Luck. So, if you buy that, then at least it worked out for them. Whether it worked out the way they planned is a different argument.
Yeah, why no talk about Lamar Jackson?
I guess size, thickness is the real reason. I'm shocked he's not more wasn't more in the discussion for the Heisman Trophy candidate. But his numbers are the same as last year. But I guess when you lose four games,
and I think. I've tweeted this out twice already this season. Once early in the season and once recently. I think Sam Darnold needs to stay in school. I think one more year would absolutely do him wonders, to be quite honest with you. But regardless, we got to pick this game and start winding this down. Give me the Chargers.
I think I said that was the Rams. It's the Chargers, obviously. So I'm taking the Browns.
Chargers. Give me the Chargers later points.
Rams -7 at Arizona. I'll take the Rams.
Boy, Wade Phillips, I listened to his press conference yesterday. You want to talk about a guy? I hope that guy writes a couple of X's and O's books when he's done, man. He really is good. I like to hear him talk and his philosophy on things. Give me the Rams on the road to cover this one.
And Giants at Raiders. We get a chance to see the whole conversation. Obviously, we get a chance to see Geno. I gotta go with Geno +8.5. Give me the Giants.
Not me. Lay those points, and I know the Raiders are without a couple of wide receivers, but I think Carr and that running game will be enough to get it done against those other quarterbacks, if you will. Oakland, lay the points at home.
And then we got our third game that could potentially be the NFC Championship game: the Eagles at the Seahawks on Sunday night, with the Eagles -5.5. This will be an interesting game, too. This is a great game to watch. I don't know where to go. The Seahawks offense is so freaking bad, and Russell Wilson does amazing things every week to keep them in games. Give me the Eagles, Dave. I'll lay the 5.5. Well, when's the last time you beat the Seahawks for a 5.5-point dog at home?
Yeah, really. Man, this is a tough one. I don't know which way to go with this one, but because of the way I like what I see out of that offense of the Eagles so far, and Seattle's still kind of banged up on defense, I'm with you. Give me the Eagles. Lay the points on the road. Well, I guess we'll pick the. Should we save the Steelers Bengals game for Monday?
Sure. Sure, let's save it for Monday.
We'll tease it. Not that people aren't going to listen anyway.
Or if you want to, should we do the podcast on Tuesday?
Yeah, that's a great point, David. Why don't we do that? Why don't we go ahead and pick this game and do a Tuesday podcast because of that, you know, because we're not going to have a lot to talk about really on Monday anyway. So all right, let's go ahead and pick this game and we'll recap it on a special Tuesday podcast.
Okay, I don't know the last time that I picked against the Steelers. I think I did it earlier this year once, maybe in Kansas City. I'm going to pick against them in this one. Just 13-3 is a good record. 12-4 is a good record. They're going to lose games. I think they'll beat the Ravens next week. I don't know what they're going to do against the Patriots. But to me, this would be a very impressive win for the Steelers to get. I don't think they're going to get it. I think they're going to lose 24-21. Give me the Bengals.
Boy, 20, giving up 24 points. Are you predicting any Bengals special teams or defensive touchdowns, or is that all offensive points by the Bengals?
No, I think they'll get. I like what the Bengals can do offensively, and I expect them to move the football.
All right, what are you showing on this? 5 points.
I'm showing. The latest is 4.5. By the way, we mentioned this right out of the chute. We talked about it on Wednesday's podcast. The line down from 6 to 4.5. So you know where I am taking the points.
You know what? I think. Look, this defense showed in the second half the last time around that they can take over a game. If they can get it into halftime with a 3-point lead or whatnot, I think they're going to be fine. I just there's something about this Bengals offense. It just and Andy Dalton and some of the inconsistencies, especially that I didn't like in that game against the Browns. I think the Steelers hold them to 17 points in this game, David. So I don't think the Steelers are going to bust out crazy point wise in this game. But give me the Steelers on the road, 23-17 in this one. I think they cover. I think we're getting set up here with people. Steelers not covering some of these bigger spreads and all, and people being concerned that the Steelers favored a little bit too heavily in this game. I think we're being set up here. So I like the Steelers to cover on the road against the Bengals.
All right.
We'll get after this again on Tuesday then. And we'll talk about, what happened in the game Monday night. Talk about what happened in the NFL. Maybe kind of a quick turnaround because we'll probably have a podcast Wednesday with our friend John. Talking about the Bengals or the Ravens and all. So in the meantime, you can follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. You can follow David Todd on Twitter at David M. Todd. Follow the show at Terrible Podcast. Email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you like what we do and you want to donate to the cause, go to SteelersDepot.com. Hit that donate button up right navigational bar.
As always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast. Have a great weekend with Dave and Dave.